This episode of the WPR Politics Podcast was recorded in front of a live audience on August 9th at The Draw in Appleton.
John.
Huh.
Why do you have a gavel, first of all? And why are all those people out there?
Well, Sean, these people are here because we're doing a live podcast recording in Appleton of the WPR Politics Podcast. So thanks all of the audience for being here. And I have a gavel because we're going to talk about closing arguments.
Oh, okay. So sort of like closing arguments in the Democratic primary in the governor's race?
No, I was thinking like Law and Order Special Victims Unit. But we can talk about the Democratic primary race and the closing arguments they're making. Sounds like something for a podcast. And this is the WPR Politics Podcast. I'm John K. Wilson.
I'm Sean Johnson.
And I'm Laurel White.
This week, let's talk about closing arguments in the final days of the Democratic primary for governor. Well, for those of you who don't know, that is the song Final Countdown by Swedish rock group Europe, released in 1986, and a perfect way to start talking about the closing days of the Democratic race to take on Scott Walker in the general election coming up in November. So, what are we going to talk about, guys? What closing arguments are these folks making?
So closing arguments, these eight people now have been running for governor for most of this year, for all of them, and some of them going way back, they've been running for governor. And now they have all of these undecided voters out in the world. In July, 38% of Democratic primary voters were undecided. Undecided was leading the race. And so you have these eight candidates who have really limited money in a way, and they just have they have to make this condensed pitch. Here is who I am. Here is why you should choose me in this crowded field when you only have a few seconds to listen to who I am.
Right.
Well, and I feel like they've become more condensed versions of themselves earlier in the campaign. Mm-hmm. Like whatever was working for them earlier, you hear even more of it now.
Right. Well, I mean, a lot of people are just tuning into the race right now, right? So they're
You guys have been with us.
Yeah, you've been with us the
right?
long
You've been following
haul,
it the
I'm
whole
sure.
time.
Yeah. But some people are just kind of tuning in. And so if you're getting there and you're like, okay, I have to vote on Tuesday, we have X number of hours until the election, what's sort of your elevator pitch, candidate number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8? And that's where they are right now.
So what are they saying? What are the condensed versions of themselves?
Well, some of them have the luxury of doing it in 30-second TV ads. Mm-hmm. Some of them have to rely on these forums like they had last night in Madison, a pretty entertaining forum where they had a lot of lightning rounds and, you know, a lot of 15-second answers. What would you do about this and that? We've been going alphabetical as we talk about this race quite a bit.
It's the only fair way to do it.
I can actually recite the candidates for governor pretty easily alphabetically, and I can picture them as I go through the alphabet.
Well, aren't they arranged on stage usually alphabetically
yeah.
as well?
Other
so they've become
doing
like little pairs of friends.
Yeah.
It's become a normal thing to do for all these groups that organize these forums. They're like, how do we do this? Well, we don't want to play favorites, so let's just go in the alphabet. Maybe that's why Tony Evers is the assumed front runner in this race. He's just
everybody mentions
his
him
last
first.
Name starts with E, and he always goes first. But yeah, I mean, Tony Evers does lead off these forums, and his pitch now is like a condensed version of what he was saying back when he got into this race. I have won. I have won three times in Wisconsin. I will win. I lead in the polls. I can beat Scott Walker. I've won 70 of 72 counties in the last election for state superintendent.
I've lived all over central Wisconsin.
Right.
I can connect with voters all across the state. I can win statewide.
He's not sitting up there saying, I'm the candidate for you because I've worked in education forever. And it's not that he doesn't talk about that stuff, mm-hmm. but pitch number one for Tony Evers, the closing argument for Tony Evers has become, I'm a winner. Vote for me.
Mm-hmm. And so is he making that pitch in ad buys? Is he one of the ones who has money for that? Or is he making that pitch in forums?
Tony Evers is one of the people who has money for ad buys. They're not big ad buys, any of these, though, because the Democrats have their money is spread so thin. Actually, if you stack up all the money that was raised by Democratic candidates for governor, it is not near as much as Governor Scott Walker has raised.
Not by a long shot.
In July or in all of 2018, certainly if you go back, you know, this entire election cycle, Walker just has a lot more money to deal with right now. And part of that is, you know, he has an established fundraising machine. Part of it is Democratic donors are kind of sitting this out a little bit until a nominee is chosen.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, as the strains of Final Countdown are playing in the last few days, what is Matt Flynn, who's next alphabetically, saying in terms of his closing argument?
Oh, I feel like Matt Flynn's closing arguments got a little bit more interesting today, but I won't get ahead of myself. I think first we'll talk about Matt Flynn's closing arguments in terms of Foxconn, right? I feel like he's making Foxconn sort of his big closing thing.
Sort of. I mean, yeah? Matt Flynn has been saying over and over again, I'm the only candidate who can stop Foxconn. And all the candidates kind of make their pitch, all the Democratic candidates make their pitch in one way or another about how Foxconn's a bad deal and what they do about it. And Flynn is just kind of, through just sheer repetition and will, in a way, yeah, he said, actually, I'm the only one that has a plan to deal with it. He does say that he wants to take him to federal court and get rid of Foxconn.
Right, and he's a successful lawyer, and he's kind of playing up on that. Like, I know how to take them to court, and I know how to stop this.
That's the way I hear it, is like, yeah, I'm a lawyer, so I can deal with this. Foxconn.
Yeah.
Whereas other folks are saying maybe we can renegotiate or we can do other things to, you know, stop this from happening.
We can cut off the money to them. That's what Paul
Sullivan
said.
He's like, look, I'm gonna sue them. It's not going to happen. Also, I'm a veteran. That's what I'm saying. I keep seeing a YouTube pre-roll for everything I watch that's Matt Flynn's YouTube ad that he's,
yeah,
he's... And so he's standing there in the front and there's these, like, cardboard cutouts of all of the other candidates behind him. And, like, they sort of, like... fade away behind him, and he's like, I'm Matt Flynn, I'm the only one who's a military veteran, also I'm gonna stop Foxconn.
That's his thing.
So
I've seen it a lot lately.
As we do our research for corny songs on YouTube, we run into Matt Flynn's his ad quite a bit.
Seriously, as we were looking up Final Countdown and stuff, I'm like, did I click on the wrong link? And no, it was just a pre-roll for Matt Flynn,
yeah,
probably
because of the job target audience.
But.
So I think where Matt Flynn, and Laurel alluded to this, where Matt Flynn's closing argument gets kind of interesting, mm-hmm, is that he has gone negative.
You knew what I was going to say.
I didn't know what you were going to say. And I mean, Matt Flynn would say...
We didn't talk about this before, seriously.
Matt Flynn would say, it's not negative, I'm differentiating myself between the candidates. But he is attacking Tony Evers. He is attacking that front runner. Last night at that debate that they had in Madison, he stood right next to Tony Evers during closing arguments and referred to... Yeah, there you go. Good, good.
Closing arguments.
He referred to Tony Evers as Republican light. And he didn't name him by name, but he kind of looked at him, pointed at him, and referred to Tony Evers' stance on at the governor's education budget, which Tony Evers supported as state superintendent in 2017. Matt Flynn said, you got to differentiate yourself
between the governor. You can't call the governor's budget kid-friendly, which is what Evers did when the governor's budget came out. Now, Evers defends himself by saying, well, the governor adopted most of the budget that I proposed.
Yeah,
so
he said
I
that's basically my budget.
Right, yeah. So he says, I wasn't really praising the governor totally. I was kind of praising my budget.
But then Flynn, it wasn't just a slip. He knew what he was doing there. Mm-hmm. Evers called it a cheap shot. Flynn came back and said, look, I mean, these are Flynn's words. He said, the governor is a liar, and that if you ask an open question of the governor, like it sounds like Tony Evers is going to do with the education budget, he says, quote, he'll eat you for lunch.
Yeah.
Like a ham sandwich and cranberry juice?
Which is the governor's preferred lunch. He posted that on Twitter today. I wonder if there was something going on there with his campaign.
Yeah.
So then the Associated Press talks to Matt Flynn today, says, hey, you know, about that stuff you said last night.
Do you want to take it back?
He did not.
No.
He said that, you know, he stood by the Republican comments, and he said that Malin Mitchell and Kelda Royce, they don't have a snowball's chance of winning.
Yeah.
So I think Flynn, an attorney, his closing argument has got a bit more intense than some of the other candidates. he has veered off that path of we're all pals here and whoever wins is okay. He's definitely going after who he views as the front runner.
And he's really, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like he's the only one that's doing that to that extent. Like,
to that
I would
extent,
say
yeah, sure.
The if you're going to say who's kind of gone the most negative or aggressive, it would be him.
It'd be Flynn, yeah.
I'd argue that dropping F-bombs in a national publication is kind of aggressive too, though. Moving on to our next candidate on the list. Yeah.
It was only Segway. One F-bomb, really. But John is talking about Malin Mitchell, Madison firefighter and firefighter union chief, who was profiled in a Huffington Post article. And
if you haven't read it, you should Google it.
It was a good read. And, you know, with national publications, they can kind of, they get one shot at writing a story about our race. And so it's interesting to see who they pick to be kind of their headline candidate. You know, Kelda Royce has gotten some national attention. Tony Evers has gotten some national articles written about him because he's leading in the polls. He's setting up this education advocate versus Walker, calling himself an education governor. You've seen some of that in national publications. Huffington Post said that some Democrats think Malin Mitchell is the guy that can beat Walker. And they set him up as they viewed him as an interesting person. Mm-hmm. He's African-American in a state where African-Americans make only 6% of the population. He is a union guy who wants to run against Scott Walker, the guy that beat the unions. He's a firefighter. He says stuff that sometimes makes his campaign a little bit nervous.
Like foot-in-mouth level stuff sometimes?
Oh, some of that. Mm-hmm. But you get the sense with Malin Mitchell that he's not backing away from that in closing arguments, you know, in that in this article. What did he say about, he said a lot of stuff that's like a little awkward for us to quote.
Right, we can't directly
this
say it.
This is a family podcast.
he basically said they asked him, you know, what about being a black man running in a state that has a small percentage right. of African Americans, and what about people not wanting to vote for someone who's black? Basically, what about racism? And he said, some people are going to be racist, and I don't care about their votes, basically. I don't care about them. It was said a little bit more forcefully than that.
It was.
So, well, that's my
we'll
sweet
leave that
summary
to your
of
imagination.
That.
And he's also, you know, in his TV ad, because he's one of those candidates who's raised, you know, six figures. He's been, like, I think the second leading fundraiser among Democrats.
Because of his union support.
He's saying in his ad, quote, I will fight against racism and division. And he makes it known regularly that if he were elected, it would be history, that he would be Wisconsin's first black governor. So it's not something that he's shying away from or like pretending. It's just something that happens. He's trying to get people's attention in that elevator pitch, and that's one of the things he's going to.
He's trying to show his personality, I think.
Like, definitely,
I am
yeah.
a young, fun, funny, lighthearted, someone who doesn't take himself too seriously. I think he's trying to do the somebody you'd want to get a beer with thing.
In
like
fact,
the guy that makes jokes.
This article was at a brewery.
Well, there you
and
go.
They were having a beer.
Yeah.
So you got the message that Malin Mitchell's putting out there for sure.
So what kind of pants would you wear to a brewery, Sean, Laurel?
I'm going to go with blue jeans, John.
I think that's the kind of pants you would usually wear to a brewery, which brings us to Mike McCabe. I'm just killing these segues
I love
tonight.
These
I am just... killing
John,
it.
John
I usually
K.
don't
Wilson.
Like to toot my own horn, but
King
I am killing
segue.
It tonight.
you know, the transition.
Covering politics is a tiresome job, and so when a candidate has kind of a gimmick that they use on the trail, we just enjoy it. And mm-hmm. Mike McCabe's gimmick is I'm the blue jeans governor, meaning like I'm the common man. I'm just like you. His campaign committee is commoners for McCabe. And so we enjoy talking about his blue jeans. It's just sort of an obsession of ours.
I don't think he would mind.
he seems to have good sense of humor about it.
His yeah. logo, in fact, has like denim cutout lettering in it mm-hmm. and such.
And his Twitter handle is McDenimRebel.
That's right. He's not hiding it.
No, he's embracing it.
So Mike McCabe's kind of closing argument, he cannot afford these ads. He can't afford a Hulu ad, though.
Which
so
is
if
such
you watch
an,
Hulu.
It's such an interesting strategy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he bought a Hulu ad when other people are buying TV ads, and he said, you can, it's so easy to tune out TV ads these days.
But Hulu, so man, you can't stop.
No, you can't stop it
watch
on Hulu.
It before you get to The Handmaid's Tale.
Right, they make you watch it. You can't DVR past that stuff. So, and he's the only one that's doing Hulu ads, I think.
As far as we, well, as far as we
as
know.
As far as we know, a little interesting tidbit there.
So his ad, though, it starts with all these pictures of Democratic candidates from the past, Michael Dukakis and John Kerry, Mary Burke, the Democratic candidate for governor in 2014, and
Hillary Clinton,
and he's saying, this hasn't worked. You need a new kind of Democrat. I'm a new kind of Democrat. And it kind of goes on from there. Mm-hmm. But that's so his closing argument's totally the same one he's been making all campaign. I mean, that's McCabe's thing, is that I'm not the same kind of Democrat. And at these forums, he still gets asked, you know, are you guys going to endorse the eventual nominee? And McCabe still says, no, I'm not going to do that. A party loyalty pact is the wrong message.
He's taken a lot of heat for that, for not saying that he's going to support whoever the Democratic nominee is. And he said last night he was asked that question in Madison, and he said, you know, I want to be clear, I'm not voting for Scott Walker. I don't think, you know, but I think it's wrong to tell Democrats that any wrong to tell voters that any Democrat is okay.
Well, to go back to the pants metaphor here, where can you get some, you know, semi-affordable jeans or slacks, or like an Italian wool set of dress pants, maybe J. Crew, which is some place that this next candidate worked for a while. Also, Kenosha native.
I was wondering where he was going with that. That was
You've
okay.
Been a long way for that.
Yeah,
yeah.
Were you thinking about that the whole time we were talking about McCabe?
Maybe.
Yeah, so Josh Pade. Josh Pade is one of the younger candidates in this race.
He is the youngest. Yeah, he's 38, and which makes him the youngest by just a bit. And I've watched a few forums with Josh Pade now, too, and have interviewed him. And the most common question Josh Pade gets asked is, why are you running? Which has got to be tiresome for somebody to hear.
Who are you? Why are you running?
Because Josh Pate got in this race when there were already a bunch of candidates, and he does not have a history of running for anything. And so he's running for governor as his first office at a time when there are already quite a few candidates. And so he gets this a lot. He also gets a question about what, you know, how he's going to win when he polled at zero in the last Marquette poll, which must be awfully fun to get in a room full of people or on television, but he gets it and he keeps coming back. And the thing I've noticed with Josh Pade is he is willing in these forums to be a little bit different than the other candidates, supported the governor's tuition freeze, extending it another couple of years.
He was the only one to do that.
So he'll do that some, but his closing argument has been, I got to think personally, a bit tough to be out there saying,
His closing argument is sort of an explanation of who he is.
Yeah, repeatedly.
And I think his explanation of who he is sort of his platform and what he thinks Wisconsin needs, right? Like, I am Josh Pade. I am outsider. I've worked in business. I've worked all around the state. I know what we need to do. Elect me for governor. So it's kind of like it's an intro to him, and it's his closing argument. Yeah.
All right, so who likes Wisconsin rock band Bon Iver? Wrong part of the state, I know. But still, the reason I'm talking about him is because he endorsed Kelderoys, which is kind of an unusual endorsement from a rock musician, but
it's weird. We have this race that voters, the polling suggests people in Wisconsin don't, at least up until recently, didn't care too much about the race for governor, or hadn't followed it enough to know that's my candidate. But it is against that backdrop that Kelderoys, who in the last poll had like 3% or something, she is kind of a national rising star in politics. So nobody may be watching the race here, but she's getting celebrity endorsements all over the place and has gotten a lot of attention. She's endorsed by Emily's List. That has become kind of her. That has become her closing argument, is that I am energizing people nationally. She even mentioned this last night at the debate, not just that it's in Wisconsin, but that she's energizing people nationally. because of her campaign.
Which and is an argument that some people are that use against candidates sometimes.
Right.
Like, oh, well, money's coming from out of state. And
they have with her, you know, that you're getting your money from elsewhere. But she's okay with that. It's allowed her to run a lot more ads than other candidates. She's spent more. She's raised more. She has more cash on hand. She has spent more than the other candidates in the month of July. And, you know, we'll see soon whether that swayed anybody because she had a lot of ground to make up. But Kelda Royce has been able to make that closing argument with a little more financial oomph.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of somebody who has no association with Bon Iver, how about Madison Mayor Paul Soglin?
I would actually love to ask Paul Soglin who Bon Iver is or what Bon Iver is.
I don't know. Although, like, okay, so Bon Iver, like, on his album covers, he's into, like, weird symbols and stuff. Uh-huh. And when Paul Soglin came into the WPR studio to talk to Sean for a profile that he was doing, he was wearing a shirt that had a bunch of, like, cat patterns on it. So maybe we can say that there's, like, some sort of, like, pattern, you know, appreciation between the two of them.
What kind of cat pattern? Like lots of little cats?
It was like, you know those like Japanese waving cats? It was like a bunch of those in different sizes and like orientations. It was quite the shirt.
That's delightful.
Anyway,
wears it about town. He has cat art in his office too. So Paul Soglin at this point is a person who is comfortable with himself, I think. And doesn't really care what you think about his cat shirt.
And in a way, that's Paul Soglin's closing argument.
That's kind of his thing,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, like, this is who I am, this is what I've done, and so, I'm cool with it. If you are, vote for me.
And also, I ran a poll a really long time ago, and people seem to be cool with
it. That is, he does still talk about a poll he ran that he paid for a long time ago at this point. Let's think about Paul Soglin's opening argument in the race for governor, or like, you know, something that he said sort of in the midpoint. People aren't paying attention to this thing yet. I'm just going out, basically called it a supper club campaign. I'm going to go out and I'm just going to talk to people. And I'm not going to push myself on them. If they come up and talk to me, we'll say hi, we'll talk about stuff. But I'm not going to run a traditional political campaign. People aren't going to pay attention to this until like the closing days of the campaign. Well, here we are. We're in the closing days of the campaign. I think Soglin's kind of picked up a little bit in terms of the intensity of his campaign. He is actually, he has pulled in some big donations recently that have helped him go on the air with an ad that has like a puppet Paul Soglin beating up a puppet Scott Walker, kind of?
The puppet Paul Soglin...
beat him up.
No, like, well, so like puppet Scott Walker is going around turning little schoolhouses into charter schoolhouses, and he has like a hose full of poison that he's like squirting into lakes and stuff. So the ad is saying Scott Walker is doing X, Y, and Z to Wisconsin. He's a puppet to special interests and whatever. Me, like animated Paul Soglin, who doesn't have strings attached to him, even though he's a paper cutout, has a big pair of scissors and cuts Scott Walker's strings,
puppet
and
strings.
Then he like falls out of the picture, and then Paul Soglin like stands there like this. So, it not your like traditional political ad by any means.
Yes. It's a very weird Pinocchio reboot, really.
So what were you going to say about that ad?
I don't know. I think Soglin just seems a little more feisty to me right now. In the debate, like he seems like he's kind of having fun insulting people a little bit.
Well, I feel like he had a couple interesting moments in the debate last night. One was he talked about how he would raise taxes to fund schools.
Yeah, yeah. They framed a question around Paul Soglin, and it turned into something that everybody decided they wanted to answer. Paul Soglin has said he would raise taxes to pay for schools. You know, would you? And everybody's kind of like, oh, you know, I don't know. And they all ended up chiming in. And the general consensus among the other Democratic candidates was, we're going to pay for schools, but we're going to get the money from somewhere else. Like, we'll get it from the Foxconn deal, or we'll stop voucher schools. We'll rearrange the budget.
Or that taxes could be part of the equation, but we're not
going to
say
they,
for sure.
They're not committing.
Right. They're
so
kind of like backing
Soglin
away from
gets
it.
Up there. Yeah, can
you say that word?
I think so, yeah. Soglin gets up there and says, quote, cut the crap. if you're going to pay for schools, you got to raise taxes.
Mm-hmm.
So he's just out there saying, I'm going to do these things. I'm not going to hide what my politics are. Mm-hmm.
Well, and he also talked about the culture of politics, because he got a question about, hey, you know, you've had some pretty high profile conflicts with the Madison City Council over the years. Why would people want to support you? Or can you talk a little bit about your persona as somebody that's not afraid to kind of tangle with other politicians? And he said, there's this culture in politics where people feel like they can't, what was it? What was the word that he used?
It's just like sort of an unspoken rule that you sort of protect your own.
Yeah, that you don't throw anybody else under the bus or something. And politicians do that at the expense of people who elected them to office. And he's like, I'm not going to do that. I'll throw people under the bus if I need to.
Yeah.
Basically. But in service of you, you know, like, for you, I'll throw some people under the bus.
He said he wouldn't enjoy it, but I kind of think he does sometimes.
Well, speaking of a political culture that is not willing to throw people under a bus, you know what you need to use culture for is to make yogurt. Mm-hmm. And you know what else goes into yogurt is milk. And you know who is a part-time dairy farmer is Kathleen Vinehout. Am I right?
You thought about that during the whole Soglin segment.
I took about 20 seconds to come up with that one. I was looking for a hook in what Laurel was going to say there, and it came to me.
I looked at John, and he like blinked off there for a minute. And he was processing the Vinehout introduction.
That's great.
So here's what struck me about Vinehout recently is that as you looked at fundraising reports, she spent $0 in July. That is the last final month before the campaign, and that's unusual. You know, you often hear candidates that don't have much money say, you don't have to have big money to win. And it's a shame that there's so much big money and we're going to run a low-budget campaign, people-powered, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't often see a candidate spend zero, and that's what she reported. So you wouldn't know it, though, watching her at these debates. So Kathleen Vinehout's approach to campaigning is like putting out platform proposals on agriculture, or mm-hmm. she goes to a debate and she talks about audits and talks about it very excitedly, like
so enthusiastic.
She pumped her fist at the debate last night during part of it. She gets really emotional talking about government spending, how it could be better under her, you know, putting people first. She gets really into it and is a big time policy wonk who is not a natural political animal.
Right. I think she will admit that she doesn't enjoy fundraising. And policy stuff really is her, it's like her jam, you know?
Her bread and butter.
She gets into budgets. For people who aren't familiar, she writes her own state budget. Every time the budget comes out, she writes an alternative. And is sort of the budget expert among Senate Democrats. They ask her questions about, hey, you know, what about this program or what about that? And I think kind of a really great illustration of Vinehout's campaign, kind of what you were saying earlier, is that we were doing a story about the ads that had gone out, the TV ads. And at that point, it was just Kelda Roy's, Malin Mitchell, and Matt Flynn, I think. And I was doing some research on Kathleen Vinehout's website, and I was like, what has she been up to lately? And so I went, and she had a press release that had gone out when everybody was talking about these TV ads, and it got completely lost. But the press release was her like multi-part plan to help farmers deal with the tariffs. And that is so her, I feel like, kind of in a nutshell, is like everybody else is sort of doing TV ads, and not to minimize or whatever, but it's just interesting that she's putting out press releases about multi-part policy proposals. I feel like that's very her. In this stage.
Before we moved on from the Democrats, I want to they had a really interesting question at this debate that mm-hmm. I wanted to kind of share because it got the whole audience going, and I want to steal some of that.
And you want to get this audience going?
Did I put them to sleep with my Kathleen Vinehout policy stuff?
No.
I was riveted.
Were you? You always are.
So they talked about, the question was, if you were not on the ballot, who would you vote for? And so Tony Evers goes for, they go in alphabetical order. Tony Ever says, Kathleen Vinehout. And then Matt Flynn. See, I've got them all alphabetical right up here. Matt Flynn says, Paul Soglin. Mike McCabe says, Kathleen Vinehout, because she's you know, she knows that we have to win in other parts of the state. Josh Pade says, Kelda Royce. Kelda Royce says, thanks. but I'm going to say Paul Soglin, because she says, because it would be interesting.
It would be interesting to see the debate.
Kathleen Vinehout says, also, I like you, Tony Evers. I would support you. Soglin says, if I were not on the ballot, I would write in myself.
I wonder if he was like John, you know, when the first couple like answers were going, if the wheels were just turning in his head, like, how can I do this? Or if it just came to him immediately.
How can I get that zinger?
Right,
at
how
the
can
end
I
of
get
it?
That zinger in there? Or if it was just immediate. Like,
I don't know. Sometimes, if Paul Soglin's mind works like mine, sometimes they come and sometimes you have to really think over them.
It.
But it's the end of our list, and I won't subject you guys to any more of them. Sean Johnston is WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief.
Laurel White is WPR's Capitol Reporter.
And John K. Wilson is our resident politics nerd.
Ladies and gentlemen of the podcast listening audience, my closing argument to you is simple. Subscribe to the WPR Politics podcast on iTunes for new episodes almost every week. You can also find it on Google Play and Stitcher, as well as many other fine podcast apps. And you can catch up on all of our past episodes anytime at wpr.org/politics.